again and express appreciation for your being here. We say it so often, but we say it sincerely. It's just good to get together, not only enjoy our friendship and fellowship, but to unite ourselves as a congregation in giving our worship and praise to God. There is an outline in the bulletin this morning. If you'd like to follow along with us, please do so. Decide is to preach on deciding this morning. So that's the lesson. Decision determines destiny. By definition, to make sure we understand our words alike, you make a decision. You make a choice, understandable. It means to come to a judgment after discussion or consideration. You made a decision, a choice. To select with one's own free will was my choice. I did that. You know, I'm to blame if there's a sad consequence or a good one. You'll hold my hand up. My fault, you know, my decision caused this destiny. You make a decision, it's a voluntary choice or self-determination. You made that election. You made that selection. And then obviously our choices have consequences, whether good or bad. That was in the text that was read to us this morning. When we think about destiny, it's a state or end being determined by your choice. Because I said that or because I did that, this is the outcome. But this is the result of what I did or said. It means like cause and effect. Condition or occurrence that's traceable to a cause. Because I said or did this, this is the aftermath. I made a choice, and now here's the outcome. Or the result. Or the consequences. Sometimes I've heard parents say to their children, this is a logical consequence for what you just said or what you just did. It's logical consequence. Decisions determine destiny. Now every day, from dusk to dawn, we make decisions. Some are easy. Many of our decisions have just little consequence. You know, deciding what to wear. Little consequence. Somebody may not like what you have to wear, but that's okay. I decide to wear this tie. Doesn't bother me because I don't have to look at it. You do. Some little consequence. You know, what road to take to the building this morning? A choice. Where we're going to eat lunch? It's a little consequence. I try to choose a place where Christine can supersize her meal. But that has big consequences if I do that. Other decisions, you'll take thought. Knowing the outcome might have severe consequences. You know, especially if the choice was misguided. Of course, I didn't put in your notes, but in Hebrews 10, verse 26, it says if we sin willfully, we sin willfully. I made that determination. I did that. After that we've received the knowledge of the truth, there remains no more sacrifice for sins. In other words, there's not going to be another one given than the one that God already provided. So in this lesson, we're going to focus on deciding to become or stay on God's side. Deciding to be God's people. We're going to illustrate that with Bible stories. The song we're going to sing at the close of the lesson, number 674, is titled, I Have Decided to Follow Jesus. First stanza is that exact phrase, I have decided to follow Jesus. And then it closes with no turning back. No turning back. Next stanza is, the world behind me. The cross before me. And it repeats that phrase with no turning back. In other words, I made that decision. No turning back. Third stanza is the words, though none go with me, still I will follow. If you make the decision or others make the decision not to go, yet my choice is I'll follow. No turning back. No turning back. The last stanza is the song. It's asking others, those around us, will you decide now to follow Jesus? And that's the lesson. Will you decide now, if haven't done so already, to follow Jesus? So let's illustrate this lesson on decisions determining destiny with some illustrations from the Bible. First one, at the very beginning of the Bible story. Story of Adam and Eve, and you know the story. Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? Is that what God said? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you don't eat of that one. Don't touch it, lest you die. Oh, have all these trees you can eat of, but not that one. Don't touch it.
No.
God said. The serpent then said to the woman, then the verse continues, where God has said, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die.
Oh, really?
God said I would die, and you said I've always wanted to hear that. That sounds pretty good to me. I want to believe what you said, you old devil. Verse 6. Woman saw the tree was good for food. Now, let me look at that tree that I'm not supposed to eat or touch. I see this good for food. It was pleasant to the eyes. Oh, a good looking tree. Tree desirable to make one wise. And she took of its fruit and ate. Made a decision. She also gave to her husband with her, and he did eat.
Oh, decision.
Well, verse 24 is the destiny of that decision. So God drove out the man, placed cherubim at the east end of the Garden of Eden, flaming sword which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. Can't get back now. No turning back. Ah. Adam and Eve were created with the ability to choose. They were given a choice. And having believed a lie, they made the wrong decision. They suffered the consequences. It was a decision that determined their destiny. A second illustration from the Bible. The story of Moses and the Israelites right before they go into the promised land. Moses had led them out of Egypt, led them to Mount Sinai where they received the law. Led them to the edge of the promised land and went and spied it out, but they said, we can't. They gave a negative review and said, we can't go in and take it. So God said, because of that decision, you're going to wander for 40 years. So Moses led them in their wandering, brought them around the south end of the Dead Sea up to the Jordan River. Then Moses died there because of that. And now, before he dies and Joshua becomes the leader, Moses gives this message to the Israelites. He says, in so many words, based upon this decision or the information I'm giving you, I would have said, you know, this should be an easy decision. Here's the lesson. Deuteronomy chapter 30, beginning of verse 15. I'm going to read the entire section to you. I just gave you a brief section in your notes. So Moses begins. See? I've set before you this day life and good, death and evil. In that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in His way, to keep His commandments, statutes, and judgments, that you may live and multiply. Oh, there's a good destiny with that choice. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But, if your heart turns away so that you do not hear and are drawn away and worship other gods, serve them, I announce to you this day that you will surely perish.
Consequence for a long time.
You'll not prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to go in for them. I call heaven and earth as witness today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. And then Moses says, therefore, choose life. I've given you the information. Now you make the decision. And that decision has a consequence or a destiny. They had a choice, and it would determine their destiny. The third illustration, in your notes, they are now in the promised land. Joshua was Israel's leader after Moses, led them across the Jordan River into the promised land. For 30 years, Joshua led Israel in taking and possessing the land. And so now, after 30 years, the land is secure. Tribes are in place. And Joshua senses a lack of dedication on the part of God's people. So he calls a congregational meeting, and he issues a decision-making message. Joshua 24, beginning at verse 14. This is what Joshua said. Now, therefore, fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. Serve Him in sincerity and in truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. You've made some wrong decisions over the last 30 years. You've compromised your love for God. So now Joshua calls them together. He says, serve the Lord. And you make the choice. He says, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So the people answered and said, good choice. Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For the Lord our God is He who brought us and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt. They knew to be on God's side because it was God that delivered them. It was God that through Moses had given them the law. It was God that now has entered them into the promised land. It was God that has led them and fed them safely thus far. But all of it, they compromised. Moses says, you can't be in that situation. See, God never promises us a middle ground. But people think that middle ground is safe. And they kind of wanted the old expression, straddle the fence. They think that's a good, safe position. But it's not offered. Moses gives them, and Joshua gives them a choice. You either serve God or you serve the idols. Jesus said, if you're not with me, you're against me. Jesus, in that judgment day picture in Matthew 25, says it's either the right or the left. It's either saved or lost. It's either heaven or hell. It's either come or depart. It's either peace or pain. It's either well done or depart from me. It's either end or you're cursed. But for some reason, people think a middle ground is a safe position, and that position is not even offered. And that's what Moses and Joshua are saying to God's people, the Israelites. Make a choice. But it's this one or that one, there's not a third choice. Fourth one I have listed in your notes, familiar story of Elijah. The prophet Elijah with Israel on Mount Carmel and against the prophets of Baal. Again, Israel, even after Moses, after Joshua, God sent the prophets because they just wouldn't stay on God's side. They had trouble keeping their vows in the promised land. This is after, with the story of Elijah, this is after the kingdom has been divided into the north and the south. And now there's a wicked king in Judah, southern kingdom. A man named Ahab. Probably familiar with him. Ahab had a wife named Jezebel. And the Bible story says they killed the prophets. So now God says, Elijah, I want you to go to Ahab. Wait a minute. God goes, they killed prophets. I'm a prophet. You're sending me to Ahab, the one that killed the prophets? Yes. Ahab, go. Elijah go. Ahab described in 1 Kings 16, verse 30, Ahab the son of Omri did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. Then he, Ahab, in verse 33, set up an altar for Baal. So here's the challenge again. God or Baal? So God's prophet Elijah confronts King Ahab with the congregation of Israel present, gathered all the Israelites. Stories in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 20. Ahab sent for all the children of Israel. Gathered the prophets together on Mount Carmel. What must have been a sight. Elijah came to all the people. is a decision. They decided just to remain silent. They probably thought, oh, that's a good position. I won't commit to either side. Thought that was safe ground, and it wasn't. Story continues. Then Elijah said to the people, I alone am left a prophet of the Lord. Baal's prophets are 450 men. Then follows the well-known contest between Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal. So the contest begins. There's two altars built on top of the mountain, if you remember the story. And they decided, these 450 prophets of Baal against the one prophet Elijah. They said, from these two altars, that you, Baal's prophets, you build an altar, and I'll build an altar. In verse 24 of the text, it says, the God who answers by fire, he is God. So all the people answered, it's well spoken. Oh, and then, so here sets the stage. Elijah says, all right, 450 prophets of Baal, you go first. So after they built that altar and put the wood on it and put the sacrifice on it, they began to call upon Baal, their God. And they called upon Baal all day long. Oh, Baal, send fire. Send fire. Elijah begins to mock them and say, oh, maybe your gods are on a journey. Maybe your gods are sleeping. So they cried out the more. They began to walk pace back and forth. Began to cut themselves, the story says. But their god Baal did not answer. So at the end of the day, they had to stop. And now it was Elijah's turn. Elijah built the altar. Put on the wood. Put on the sacrifice. Then Elijah said, I want you to dig a trench around the altar. Dug a trench. Then he said, I want you to pour four barrels of water over the altar. They did. Do it a second time. Now there's 8 barrels of water on the second. Do it a third time. 12 barrels of water on the second. Then Elijah just offered a simple prayer to God. And God sent fire. Ah. And then the conclusion is in verse 39. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces. They said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. But, brethren, we have abundant evidence in the Bible to help us make a right decision in our obedience to God. The Lord is God. He's worthy of our praise, our obedience, and our service. The conclusion, the closing is, if you haven't done so already, it's time to decide to become a Christian. When the Apostle Paul was standing and preaching before King Agrippa, he said to King Agrippa in Acts chapter 26, verse 27, says, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophet? Then Paul answered his own question. He said, I know that you do believe. Then King Agrippa said to Paul, you almost persuade me to become a Christian. Ooh, wrong answer. Almost. Isn't my belief enough? But yet even King Agrippa and Paul saying, I know you believe, that belief was not sufficient because even King Agrippa said, I'm almost persuaded to become a Christian. In his belief, he's not a Christian. If you're not a Christian, don't make the same wrong decision. We're going to sing that song, the right decision. I have decided to follow Jesus. If you haven't done so already, simple plan or formula or steps to take. Number one, you need to hear the word of God. You need to hear it. Jesus said that you need to come learn of me in Matthew 11, verse 7. Come learn of me. Second, you'll need to believe the message that God so loved the world, he sent his son. Believe that message. Paul said in Romans chapter 10, how can you believe in someone you haven't heard about? The Hebrew writer said in chapter 11, verse 6, without faith it's impossible to believe God. So you need to hear the word of God, then believe it. Then number three, in the words of Jesus, you'll need to repent. Meaning turn your life around. Say, present yourself before God with the attitude that says, here am I, send me. Or command and I'll obey. Speak, I'll listen. It's an attitude of life where we want to present ourselves before God, God's way. Then number four, you want to confess your faith that Jesus Christ is God's Son before the witnesses that are here. And then when those four things are in place, you can be baptized as the Ethiopian was when Philip preached unto him Jesus. The Ethiopian said, here's water, anything hindering or stopping me from being baptized. Philip said, if you believe you may. The Ethiopian said, well, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Philip said, stop it, stop it. They both went down into the water and Philip baptized. They both came up out of the water and the Ethiopian went on his way rejoicing. That's the invitation we extend at the close of every lesson. So if you make that decision already to follow Jesus, bless you. this season already, we're going to sing the song of invitation, of encouragement. If that's your resolve, if that's your desire, while we're singing the song, just come and have a seat beside me. At the close of the song, I'll simply ask you a question. What's on your mind? And you will say, Brian, I want to be baptized.